Well, good evening. Greet each of you in Jesus' name again. I have enjoyed being here. I enjoy going new places, and I enjoy going home. So I've got the best of both. I've been to a new place, and now I get to go home. You are a hospitable people. I didn't really know anyone when I came here, but I appreciate your friendship. Appreciate the hospitality you've shared with me. I was very well taken care of where I was put up for the weekend. And I appreciate that. If you ever travel up the 81, like you're going to Harrisonburg or you're going to Lancaster, you come very close to where we live. Once you go up 81 and you get into Virginia, it's about another hour to the area where we live, sort of an hour above Bristol, a little past Withville, and before you get to Roanoke, kind of in that area. We have three empty bedrooms in our house some of the time. And if you ever come that way, we would be disappointed if you didn't come and stop in for the night. You would be very welcome. And I'll sort of make the deal like this. If you are bold enough to call and say, you don't remember me, but we'd like to stop in for the evening. If we already have a house full of company, I'll tell you. You won't have to sleep with anyone else. But it's very likely we have at least one empty bedroom and sometimes three, and you would be very welcome to come. My wife would enjoy getting to meet you. I'm taking a church calendar home, and she will pick it apart, and she will figure out which of you are related to her and whether you're second, third, or fourth cousins. So I was driving around here the last couple days. I noticed that there are some similarities between this part that you live in and where we live. It's a hilly place where we live. There's a lot of up and down, and there's some up and down here. Perhaps our hills are a little higher than yours, but that depends on where you're at, too, in the county. You have good roads here. I do take note of roads. We tend to have good roads in our county. Our taxes, I don't consider them to be high, but the county is well run and we have good roads. But roads are very expensive, particularly in a place like this. Coming between Wayne's and here, there are some straight stretches, but if you pay attention to the straight stretches around here, you will notice that they are not naturally straight. The road, if it was just laid on the ground, would go like this, up and down, or it would go like this, back and forth, more than it does. And that's because longer ago, they did a great deal of work to either build up a roadbed, and if you look, you can see it. Like, there's a mound of dirt that this road is built on. In some places, it's 2 feet high, in some places, it's 16 feet high. But someone, once upon a time, did a lot of work to make the road level. They took out the humps, and that's why you have cuts on the side and exposed stone. And then they pushed that fill into the low places so that instead of going like this, the road more often goes like this in a gentle up and down. And they also took some of the curves out at great expense. That's the way the roads are where we live. Turn your Bibles to Psalm chapter 3. I want to do two different things tonight. And the first thing we're going to do is take apart some verses. I'm sorry, I said Psalms 3. I meant Proverbs 3. Take apart some verses and take a lesson on how good God is. Proverbs chapter 3. And go down to verse 5. We'll read 5, 6, and 7. These are very familiar verses. But if you understand what some of these words mean, they took special meaning for me. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes, fear the Lord, and depart from evil. So it talks about trusting in the Lord. I don't know what you would write down if you were writing down a definition for trust. Maybe we would all have slightly different definitions. But you know how trust feels. So you could, in your mind, you could identify the faces of people that you trust and the feeling that you get from the people you trust. And I think probably most of you would also be able to call to memory someone that you do not trust. And maybe you can't even say exactly what it is about that person, but you feel that you cannot trust them. So what is trust? Trust is something that can be felt. Trust can be won, and trust can be lost. The scripture says, trust in the Lord. In Psalm 37, it says, commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. It says you are to do this with all of your heart. Well, what's your heart? It's not really referring to the little piece of meat that's in your chest pumping away. It's more referring to the heart of your emotions, the center of your being. I would say that your heart is who you really are. That is your heart. The Bible says that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So your heart defines who you are. We're also told to guard your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. If we take that verse apart, there's some interesting things there as well. It says, keep your heart with all diligence. The word keep in the Hebrew actually is their word for guard. So if we had a more direct translation than we have in the King James, it would read, guard your heart. The word diligence is the Hebrew word mishmar, and guess what it means? It means guard. The first word, keep your heart, is natsar, and that's the verb, to guard something. The word for diligence is mishmar, and it means the person who is a guard. Guard your heart with a guard, for out of it are the issues of life. The word issues is a big, long Hebrew word I won't try to pronounce, but it means the boundaries, the exits, or the outcomes. Guard your heart with a guard, because out of it come the outcome in your life, kind of what's going to happen to you. It's going to happen out of the heart. So guard that heart with a guard. Let's go back to Proverbs chapter 3. And the verse I want to take apart is verse 6. In the English, it reads, be not wise in thine own eyes. I'm sorry. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Let's take three words apart there. In all your ways. That's the Hebrew word derek. Not derek, like we call someone derek, but derek. And that word, it is the word they would use for any common path that you tread. So it's the path between your house and the barn, between the house and the woodshed. Any place that a person would walk, that if you're observant, you can see, well, obviously people walk right there. Maybe you chose this type of carpet in this building. I think those are probably carpet squares. Because you know what? When people walk in a building, they don't walk on all the carpet equally. They tend to walk in certain places, and that carpet wears out faster. If you use roll carpet, then you can actually, after a couple years, you can kind of see paths. And one of them goes off into the men's room, and one goes into the ladies' room, and one goes down the aisle, and they go across here, and one comes up here where the preachers always walk. The word there for ways is the word for the common paths that you walk every day. What's it say? It says, in all thy common paths, acknowledge the Lord. And what? He shall direct thy paths. Well, we have the word paths again, but that's in English, and it's the wrong word. It's not that the translator sought to deceive us. They just didn't make a good choice when they chose their word. The word for paths that's in the English there is the Hebrew word orak, and it was their word for the caravan route, not the path to the chicken coop. It was the big road. We would say today the interstate. So catch what the distinctions of what's being said here. It's clearer in the Hebrew than it is in the English. In all your little paths, acknowledge him, and he shall direct your interstates. Let's take the word direct. The word direct is the word yarshar, and it means to make straight and to level out. So just like your roads here have been straightened out and they've been leveled out, the high spots have been dug down, and that fill has been pushed into the low spots so that instead of going like this as you drive, or like this, you can go like this or like this. It's a gentler road. If you acknowledge the Lord in all your little paths, that means if you acknowledge the Lord in what you're doing tomorrow, taking care of the children at home, going to work, relating with a coworker, going to town, you acknowledge the Lord in all your little paths. He says that he's going to go out in front of you on the interstate, and he is going to be a bulldozer leveling it out, so that when you get to the big decisions of life, it's going to be much easier. So when you've got little decisions in life, they actually matter more than the big decisions. The way that you live your life on Monday matters, because if you acknowledge God in all of the little things, the little decisions, he is your bulldozer miles out ahead of you, and he's straightening out the big decision that's going to come your way 3 or 4 or 10 years from now. He's already pushing over the hills, filling in the low spots, taking the sharpness out of the curve. That's a pretty good God that we serve, and it's reason to follow him. Going to change direction now, and I'm going to tell you a little story, and then we're going to do a little self-evaluation out of that story. This is a true story. This is something that happened to me some years ago. It's made a fairly big impact on my life. I was working at an AF seminar, and I think the only thing I had done at the seminar that day is maybe I had the opening devotions. But I was out in the lobby at the registration table, and I was trying to work, do my real work, get things done. And at the end of the day, people were filing out, and a fellow came by the table and tossed a business card down, and he said, "I'd appreciate it if you would call me sometime." Well, that's not uncommon. That happens all the time. I sort of collect those business cards in my pocket, and when I get home, I make a list, and I work down through that list of the people that I need to call, people I need to talk to, hook them up with whatever connection they need to make. So when I got down to that person's name on the list, I'll call him Samuel. That is not his real name. But when I got down to Samuel's business card and I called him, it turned into a rather lengthy discussion. He was a man younger than I would say what I would call a young married man, and he had a lot of woe in his life. Had a wife and 2 little children, 2 daughters. The youngest one was about the size of that one right there, and the older one was maybe about 7 years old. His wife had cancer. She had brain cancer, and it was not going well. He had a lot of distress in his life. He was trying to take care of his wife. She wasn't really capable of helping with the children as she had. He was a dad, and he had 2 little girls. And dads do good with little girls somewhat, but 24 hours a day, a little difficult for him. We ended up developing a pretty deep relationship. He would call me very often, and when he called, you would be on the phone for 1.5 hours. I started going to their house every time I went to Lancaster, and I would stay at their house. We became good friends. This went on for some period of time. The wife, we will call her Sadie, that is not her real name. She had additional surgeries, rounds of chemotherapy. For a while, she tried natural treatments and then went back to the medical side. But finally, she was approaching the end. She was down in John Hopkins Hospital. And I, on a trip to Pennsylvania, I made it a point, I'm going to go by Baltimore, or I'm going to go down to John Hopkins, and I'm going to go see Samuel and Sadie. And she was near the end. Her body was emaciated. She was kind of skeleton-like, as people sometimes are at the end of a long cancer journey. She was not an old lady. I think by that time she might have hit about 30 or 32 years old. She was not in good shape. Samuel and Sadie and I, we visited for a while. And then Samuel got up. He was going to go out to the waiting room for a while. A bunch of relatives were out in the waiting room, and he just kind of needed to get out, as you do if you spend a lot of time in the hospital. And I said, that's fine. I'll stay here with Sadie. You go ahead and go on out. So he went on out, and Sadie and I were talking. And it's obvious that this is a woman that's going to die. There's no longer any doubt about it. There's no doubt in my mind she's going to die, no doubt in her husband's mind. There's also no doubt in Sadie's mind. The woman knows that she is at death's door. And we were talking, and she wanted to hold my hand. So I held her hand, and we were talking. And I felt prompted to make sure of her spiritual condition. I knew what her spiritual condition was. I felt confident that she was a believer, that if she died, she would go to heaven. But when you are with a dying person, that is a question that's always worth asking, just to make sure. Is there anything you want to talk about? Is there anything you need to think about, you need to do, anything you need help with? So I asked her. And her mind was still clear at this point. She gave a very clear Christian testimony. I mean, it was a ringingly clear Christian testimony. And she ended with, God be merciful to me, a sinner. She was speaking in a very quiet voice, but as she was relating her eternal hope, she was holding my hand, and she was holding my hand very tightly. Like, it was like I was actually thinking about it. A woman is squeezing my hand that tightly. I mean, she's squeezing a hand harder than a man can squeeze a hand, and she's on death's door. She got quiet for a little bit, and we just weren't talking. It was very quiet in a hospital room. Quiet in the sense that hospital rooms get quiet. You know, there's always that faint beeping, and you can sort of hear that there are other people in other rooms moving around. But it was quiet for a good little while. And then she started talking again. She made three statements, and then she asked a question. She, in leading up to this, she was getting very agitated. So in my mind, I'm thinking about this, and I'm wondering, you know, is her pain level very bad? What's happening with her? And it wasn't pain. She did have pain, but she was emotionally agitated. And these were the three things she said. It seemed to me that she had, like, prepared these statements, that she had been thinking about this, and when she got her chance, she was going to work herself up, and she was going to say these three things. I think she intentionally, I know that she intentionally waited till Samuel was out of the room to say this. The first thing she said when she started talking was, I am not afraid to die. And then there was a little pause, and she said, I am not afraid for the girls. And then there was a little pause, and then she said, but I am afraid for Samuel. The question she asked was, will you watch Samuel and take care of him? And I immediately replied, I mean, what reply can you give when someone, a dying woman, who's holding on to your hand and earnestly speaking with you, and she says, will you watch Samuel and take care of him? You give the answer that you would give. My answer was, I will look after him. And at that point, she became exceedingly agitated. She pulled herself up on her elbows off the bed, and she shook her head with great emotion and said, no, you have to promise. Well, what do you do then? Well, when a dying woman says you must promise, you promise. So I promised. I said, I promise. I will take care of Samuel. And she dropped back in the bed, and she was done. She didn't talk anymore. She didn't let go of my hand. I eventually had to leave, and I had to pull my hand out of hers and leave the hospital room. I never talked to her again. I did see her again, but the next time I was at the hospital, she was no longer capable of recognizing people. And then she died sometime after that. I tried to keep my promise. I spent a good deal of time calling Samuel. I would call him every week, see how he's doing. I went there regularly. I would plan like an extra half day in a trip, and I would go down to Samuel's and spend the night with him and the girls. He would come to our place in Virginia. He would go on work teams, you know, disaster relief things, and bring the girls and leave them for a week or a weekend. We stayed in touch. But then some years later, Samuel's life took a turn. When I left Annie's hospital room that day, something bothered me. I had made a mistake. She had asked me to take care of Samuel because she said, I am afraid for Samuel. Do you know what I did not do? This woman had me far out of my comfort zone. Like, I was all terrible nervous. I didn't ask her why she was afraid for Samuel. I should have. I should have said, what should I be worried about? Thereafter, I often wondered, what was it that she was so afraid of for him? What did she know that I didn't know? But I never got the chance to ask that question because I didn't ask it when I had the chance. Years later, Samuel's life took a turn. And I think today I know what she was afraid of. She was not afraid to die. She was not afraid for her two little girls. She was afraid for her husband. And Samuel's life did not end well. I think I know what she was afraid of. Got some questions for you tonight. Got a little handout here. So if a couple of you can help me here. Why don't you fellas right here? Why don't you all help? Let's quickly pass these out. Fill in your answers if you want, but I almost suggest that you don't do it tonight. Because people are sitting next to you and they might see what you write. So I'll grant you, you don't have to do it tonight if you don't want to. Somebody's sitting right beside you. But I think it would do you good to actually write down answers to these questions. It would do you good, and it might do someone else good. I'll wait till they're all passed out. The first thing that Sadie told me when she kind of made her announcements, she said, I am not afraid to die. My first question for you, would you be afraid to die? And that is a yes or no question. You either circle yes or you circle no. Would you be afraid to die? I did this at our church some years ago, and then I told the people, I'm going to come back and I'm going to ask every one of you these questions in person. Like, I'm going to look you in the eye, I'm going to ask you these questions. Are you afraid to die? And I got a variety of answers. Some people could give a very clear no, just as Annie, as that lady did. No, I'm not afraid to die. And they could explain why they were not afraid to die. I was surprised at the number that said, yes, I would be afraid to die. They had different reasons for being afraid. Some responded that I would be afraid to die because there's something not right. And if I actually was at death, I would be scared for myself. There's something I have to do. There's something I have to take care of. Would you be afraid to die? Yes or no? Others were afraid to die because they were afraid for somebody else. It would be too hard on my mom if I died. I would be worried about my mom if I died. Well, that's an entirely different reason for being afraid to die. But the question is, would you be afraid to die? Would you circle yes or would you circle no? If you circle yes, why would you be afraid to die? I think it would do you good to write the answer down. You don't necessarily have to show it to anyone, but make yourself write the answer down. Why would you be afraid to die? If the answer is no, I don't believe I would be afraid to die, then write down why you would not be afraid to die. I think it would do you good to put it in writing why you would not be afraid to die. Second question. It's a different question. If someone who knew and cared about you would be like Sadie and they would be afraid for you, like in their heart, they're afraid for you, what would they be afraid of? If they were thinking about you and death and spiritual life, and in their heart they were afraid for you, what is it about you that someone who knows you well and cares about you would have a reason to be afraid? If you're able to write something down there, I think it would be informative for you. The third question is entirely different yet again. Is there someone for whom you would be afraid if they died? If you left here and went out to your vehicle and picked up your phone, and there was a voicemail or a text message letting you know that this person died while you were in here tonight, or maybe it was someone here in your church and you got word tomorrow morning that they died this night, and a little chill would go down through your heart because you're not sure. You would be a little bit afraid for this person. Is there someone for whom you would be afraid if they died? A couple of questions that go with that. If so, who are they? Write their name down. Why would you be afraid for them? You might not be able to put exact words to it, but write down whatever words describe the feeling you have. This is why I feel I would be afraid for that person. Maybe it's a mom or dad, maybe it's one of your children. Maybe it's a brother or sister. Maybe it's someone you work with. But you would be afraid for them. Why would you be afraid? The third question, it would do you good to write down, what have you done about it? If there is someone, and you can actually write their name down, and you can put some sort of words to why you're afraid for them, well then, what in the world have you done about it? And then the last question, what are you going to do about it? Is there someone that you really do need to talk to? And you can't put it off any longer. Because if they would die, you would be afraid for them. And then you would feel guilty forevermore in this life that I knew there was something wrong. Or I thought there was something wrong and I didn't say anything. I would encourage you to do this. Take this little piece of paper home, maybe when you have your devotions tomorrow morning, open it up, answer the question. Would you be afraid to die? Yes or no? If you answer yes, why? If you answer no, why? If somebody knew and cared about you and they were afraid for you, if you would die, why do you think they would be afraid? What is it about you that would give someone a reason to have a doubt or fear in their mind? Third, is there someone for whom you would be afraid? If there is, what is the person's name? Write it down. Why would you be afraid for them? The best that you're able to describe it. What have you already done about it? You either have something to write down or you have nothing to write down. And then the last question, what are you going to do about it? Lord bless you as you follow him. We'll call for a song.